The Lenni Lenape claim the honor of having received and welcomed the Europeans on their first arrival in the country, situated between New England and Virginia. It is probable, however, that the Mahicani or Mohicans, who then inhabited the banks of the Hudson, concurred in the hospitable act. The relation I am going to make was taken down many years since from the mouth of a great Delaware Indian, and may be considered as a correct account of the traditions existing among them of this momentous event. A great many years ago, when men with a white skin had never yet been seen in this land, some Indians who were out fishing at a place where the sea widens spied, at a great distance, something remarkably large floating on the water, and such as they had never seen before. These Indians immediately returned to the shore, apprised their countrymen of what they had observed, and pressed them to go out and discover what it might be. They hurried out together and saw with astonishment the phenomenon which now appeared to their sight, but could not agree upon what it was. Some believed it to be an uncommonly large fish or animal, while others were of the opinion it must be a very big house floating on the sea. At length, the spectators concluded that this wonderful object was moving towards the land, and that it must be an animal or something else that had life in it. It would therefore be proper to inform all the Indians on the inhabited islands of what they had seen, and put them on their guard. Accordingly, they sent off a number of runners and watermen to carry the news to their scattered chiefs, that they might send off in every direction for the warriors with a message that they should come on immediately. These arriving in numbers and having themselves viewed the strange appearance and observing that it was actually moving towards the entrance of the river or bay, concluded it to be a remarkably large house in which the Manito himself was present, and that he probably was coming to visit them. By this time the chiefs were assembled at York Island, and deliberating in what manner in which they should receive the Manito on his arrival, every measure was taken to be well provided with plenty of meat for sacrifice. The women were desired to prepare the best victuals, and a grand dance was decided not only to be an agreeable entertainment for the great being, but it was believed that it might, with the addition of a sacrifice, contribute to appease him if he was angry with them. The conjurers were also set to work to determine what this phenomenon portended and what the possible result of it might be. To these and to the chiefs and wise men of the nations, men, women, and children were looking up to for advice and protection. Distracted between hope and fear, they were at a loss as to what to do. A dance, however, commenced in great confusion. While in this situation, fresh runners arrived, declaring it to be a large house of various colours and crowded with living creatures. It appeared now to be certain that it is the great Manito bringing them some kind of game, such as he had not given them before, but other runners soon after arrived declare that it is positively a house full of human beings, of quite a different colour from that of the Indians, and dressed differently from them, that in particular one of them was dressed entirely in red, who must be the Manito himself. They are hailed from the vessel in a language they do not understand, yet they shout out or yell in return by way of answer, according to the custom of the country. Many are for running off to go to the woods, but are pressed by others to stay, in order not to give offence to their visitor, who might find them out and destroy them. The house, some say, large canoe, at last stops, and a canoe of smaller size comes on shore with the red man and some others in it. Some stay with his canoe and guard it. The chiefs and wise men assembled in council form themselves into a large circle, towards which the man in red clothes approaches with two others. He salutes them with a friendly countenance, and they return the salute after their manner. They are lost in admiration. The dress, the manners, the whole appearance of the unknown strangers is to them a subject of wonder. but they are particularly struck with him who wore the red coat, all glittering with gold lace, which they could in no manner account for. He surely must be the great Manito, but why should he have a white skin? Meanwhile, a large hack is brought by one of his servants, from which an unknown substance is poured out into a small cup or glass, and handed to the supposed Manito. He drinks, has the glass filled again, and hands it to the chief standing next to him. The chief receives it, but only smells the contents, and passes it on to the next chief, who does the same. The glass or cup then passes through the circle, without the liquor being tasted by anyone, and is upon the point of being returned to the red-clothed Manito, when one of the Indians, a brave man and a great warrior, suddenly jumps up and harangues the assembly on the impropriety of returning the cup with its contents. It was handed to them, says he, by the Manito, that they should drink out of it as he himself had done. To follow his example would be pleasing to him, but to return what he had given them might provoke his wrath and bring destruction on them. And since the orator believed it for the good of the nation that the contents offered them should be drunk, and as no one else would do it, he would drink it himself, let the consequence be what it might. It was better for one man to die than that a whole nation should be destroyed. He then took the glass, and bidding the assembly a solemn farewell, he at once drank up its whole contents. Every eye was fixed on the resolute chief to see what effect the unknown liquor would produce. He soon began to stagger, and at last fell prostrate on the ground. His companions now bemoan his fate. He falls into a sound sleep, and they think he has expired. He wakes again, jumps up, and declares that he has enjoyed the most delicious sensations, and that he has never before felt himself so happy as after he had drunk the cup. He asks for more, his wish is granted. The whole assembly then imitate him, and all become intoxicated. After this general intoxication had ceased, for they say that while it lasted, the whites had confined themselves to their vessel, the man with the red clothes returned again and distributed presents among them, consisting of beads, axes, hoes, and stockings such as those the white people wear. They soon became familiar with each other and began to converse by signs. The Dutch made them understand that they would not stay here, but would pay them another visit the next year, when they would bring them more presents and stay with them a while. But as they could not live without eating, they should want a little land. They went away as they had said, and returned in the following season, when both parties were much rejoiced to see each other. But the whites laughed at the Indians, seeing that they knew not the use of the axes and hoes that they had given them the year before. For they had these things hanging to their breasts as ornaments, and the stockings were made use of as tobacco pouches. The whites now put handles on the former for them, and cut trees down before their eyes, hoed up the ground, and put the stockings on their legs. Here, they say, a general laughter ensued among the Indians. They took every white man they saw for an inferior Manito attendant upon the supreme deity who shone superior in the red and laced clothes. As the whites became daily more familiar with the Indians, they at last proposed to stay with them, and asked only for so much ground for a garden spot, as, they said, the hide of a bullock would cover or encompass, which hide was spread before them. The Indians readily granted this apparently reasonable request, but the whites then took a knife, and beginning at one end of the hide, cut it up to a long rope, not thicker than a child's finger, so that by the time the whole was cut up, it made a great heap. They then took the rope at one end and drew it gently along, carefully avoiding its breaking. It was drawn out into a circular form, and being closed at its ends, encompassed a large piece of ground. The Indians were surprised at the superior wit of the whites, but did not wish to contend with them about a little land, as they had still enough themselves. They lived contentedly together for a long time, though the former from time to time asked for more land, which was readily obtained. And thus they gradually proceeded higher up the Mahicanatuck, until the Indians began to believe that they would soon want all their country, which in the end proved true.